Before this current sermon series, we had a two-part sermon series entitled The Season of Enticing, which obviously is very much about this season of the year and a spinoff from that, and what Satan has been doing for the past 6,000 years. And we then continued into this current sermon series with a new title, yet both series are directly tied together, as the subject matter of this series directly concerns changes that need to be made in the millennium, changes which are to begin, that we are to be considering now in our personal lives. In other words, we're to see what changes we need to begin making because it has to do with our thinking process. If we're not addressing changes in our own life, then our minds can't be healed to the degree we can understand and comprehend the soundness of mind that God wants us to grasp as we focus on some of these things of where we're going and why these kinds of changes have to take place. In other words, we won't be able to understand it if we don't examine our own lives and begin making more changes now. We'll be blinded to those things. We'll not grasp the depth of those things. We'll not see the urgency in those things. So we need to be making changes in our lives where we can, understanding especially some of the things we've been talking about concerning technology. So we need to be making adjustments and changes so that we can come to better understand why many changes must take place. Not just why, but even begin to understand how and to be able to judge it properly. So today is part two of the new sermon series entitled True Freedom. I thought it'd be good to share a quote that an elder up in Pennsylvania reminded me of this week that truly goes along with the essence of this sermon series. And but I mentioned he's associated with ginseng and fur trading and a few other things. Not to tell what his name is or anything, but anyway. I don't like mentioning names in sermons, but I sure gave that one away. But the quote comes from Douglas MacArthur, General Douglas MacArthur, in a radio address that he gave right after the surrender ceremony of Japan aboard the USS Missouri on September the 2nd, 1945. So he gave this address first aboard the ship, and then after that he gave a radio address, and this is the one where this quote is made. I'm not going to read the whole quote, but again, very prophetic in that respect that God gave to someone an ability to see something like this, for something like this to be said. But breaking into part of the flow here, it says, and again, this is just after World War II, two nuclear weapons, bombs, had gone off in Japan. And it says here, this is most of the way, or part of the way through the message, he says, men, since the beginning of time, have sought peace. Military alliances, balances of power, leagues of nations, all in turn failed. And then, of course, what followed that, the United Nations, which has also failed, obviously. Leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. We have had our last chance. If we do not devise some greater and more equitable system, Armageddon will be at our door. And the problem is we haven't, and that's what's at the door now. If we do not devise some greater and more equitable system, again, Armageddon will be at the door. The problem basically is theological and involves a spiritual recrudescence. A kind of renewal after a long inactivity is what this is talking about. An improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advances in science, art, literature, and all material and cultural development of the past 2,000 years. It must be of the spirit if we're to save the flesh. That's amazing because it is from God. The only thing is, he hadn't known, he didn't know at that time, and the world hasn't known what truly comes from God and what God's plan is. And so these things here, amazingly, go along with what is being said here, because this is exactly where we are in time, because man hasn't been able to fight his own battles, hasn't been able to bring about peace, and that kind of war doesn't bring about peace. The only thing that can happen is that war is ended, and that's what God is going to do, and then establish peace by a right government on earth. So, you know, awesome where we're headed and awesome where we are in time. But it was stated last Sabbath that mankind as a whole cannot deal with, very awkward way of saying it, unrestraint. Again, having to do with the want or freedom from restraint. The problem is we need restraint in life, in human life. We need laws. We need to show what the boundaries are. Human beings need that in their life. The millennium is going to need that. And the problem is, even as I was researching a subject that will probably be in next Sabbath sermon, that there is so much conflict out there and people are so far off base, they're so unbalanced, so unsound in mind, that they take the opposite stance in so many things having to do with what we're discussing here about the use of technology and the ability to be easily enticed to sin. That's the nature of mankind. The nature of mankind resists God and fights against God's way of life. And we need restraint. We need guidelines. We need boundaries. And man's definition, which Satan has foisted off on mankind, of freedom is a lie. And true freedom then comes from God, and He shows us the way. And it's that of coming out of Egypt, of being made free from sin, of not being in bondage to sin. And so that's why we're going through this particular sermon series, to begin to talk about some of those things that are affecting this world in a profound way. Couldn't help but thinking about it here this morning as we were going through, as I was going through some of this and thinking about next Sabbath sermon as well. Entire society has changed in the last 200 years in a profound way. Not good. Everything within families, the structure of families, how things are done, has been turned upside down as a result of technology, because man can't deal with it properly, because he hasn't been shown how to deal with it properly, how to use it properly. And the reality is that has affected everything in society, everything in civilization, everything to do with families, the core of civilization, if you will, around the world. And that has to be totally turned right side up. Because before that, as a whole, the world was more of an agrarian society. Lifestyle, the way people lived their lives, how life functioned, even within homes and families, was drastically different in an agrarian society compared to what it is today. Today it's totally reversed. Very little is agrarian as far as, and that is filled with technology today. So even there they have the effects of what has happened in cities and what has happened in manufacturing, and on it goes. And it has changed the structure, but it's needed, because it's a transition in time, because we're coming into a time of a greater technology explosion, if you will, of things that are going to be on the world scene in ways that we haven't even thought of yet, that man is going to be given the opportunity to accomplish. And so we have this little transition in time to show the need for the right use, because even with what we have, we've so misused it. Mankind has totally messed up the world. And so to me, it's exciting thinking about where we are and why God has allowed us to have such a taste of technology over the last, especially the last 50 years, to the degree we have, because of what's coming on the world scene. And considering the God family and things that God is leading us to, it is awesome to become a part of Elohim, to grasp the power that's there. We can't. To grasp the responsibility of power there, we can't. And so the opportunity to learn those things is going to be far more profound in that respect in the millennium and in the great white throne for the vast majority of mankind. So, again, talking about restraint, the need for restraint, the need for law and so forth, the need for boundaries, as it was also covered, Satan again has greatly deceived mankind as to the idea about freedom. He's twisted and distorted the truth about what true freedom is. That can only come from God. God is the only source of it as a result of His way of life. So, for human nature, again, mankind has to have restraints, has to have laws that reveal how mankind should live and practice life. So I want to just remind you of a few verses we've looked at. I think of John chapter 8. You don't need to turn there if you don't want to. But again, Satan's brand or definition of freedom leads to sin. It leads to bondage. And that's why there's so much more. You know, it's amazing how we are able to see more and more and grasp more and more things that God has given to us through time. We're able to gain a deeper understanding of some of the most basic and simplest of verses in the Bible. And here's an example of one in John chapter 8 that we discussed last Sabbath, verse 31. Then Jesus said to those Jews who believed on Him, "If you continue in My word, if you dwell in, live in, abide in, continue in," how that word is translated in English, "in My word, then you shall be My disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." You know, we just continue to build upon that understanding of what that means. And again, what it means to be free by God's way of life. And all that's contained in that, that this sermon has been discussing. And so again, Satan's brand or definition of freedom leads to sin, it leads to bondage. And it's amazing when you go back and look at some things. Satan started this from the very beginning. And that's an example back in Genesis chapter 3. So basic, so profound. That's why so often, Mr. Armstrong especially, and the last few years of his life so often would go back to the very beginning in Genesis, because the things that happened with Adam and Eve are the very things that have carried through the past 6,000 years into the rest of time of humanity. The problems and the basic principles that are there are the very things that man has dealt with for the past 6,000 years. It's just been magnified many times over. But the basic spirit of it, the basic principles are right here in Genesis and things that happened with Adam and Eve. And here's an example, Genesis chapter 3. The being that's always been there, the being that was from there from the beginning has always been around doing the same thing. Verse 1. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Eternal God had made. More cunning. He's a powerful being, far more than human beings. And he said to the woman then, "Has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" So again here, there's this attitude and spirit that when you know human nature, which he did, he knew the nature that they had, yet this is the very beginning, if you will, then, of sin. This is the very beginning of enticing. This is the very beginning of how Satan began to work with mankind, which he would do for the rest of time. But again, it's this twisting or distorting of things and planting of ideas or thoughts in the mind that on a normal basis, just like I mentioned with the angelic realm, they didn't think of anything else but God's way of life until this being came up with a different thought, an idea, because he wanted something different. And because of pride and then sin went in a different direction, distorted, perverted his mind. And this is basically what happens then very quickly with human beings, because it doesn't take long with human beings. We don't know how long that took in the angelic realm for that to happen. We don't know if it was 100 years, thousands of years, as far as earth years are concerned, millions. We don't know. God will one day reveal to us the process there. But a much longer process than that which deals with mankind. Because it doesn't take mankind long. With human nature, is very quick to be enticed, to be lured to sin, to fight against God, to begin something that God warned against from the very beginning. But we have to go through this process. So again, basically it was being asked by Satan, are you indeed not free to eat of every tree? That's the thought that was planted in her mind. Are you not free? Because she hadn't thought of it in this regard. She hadn't looked at what God had said in this manner. She just accepted what God had said. But it didn't take very long for this thought to be thrown at her to speed up the process of something that would have happened in time anyway. It would have happened in time anyway. But the reason it's happening this way is to teach lessons. Teach lessons, first of all, to us to understand that being, that he's always there, that he is the one that stirs things up, that he is at the forefront of everything to fight against God's way of life, and that we are no power against that as human beings because of our basic nature, being selfish as it is, being very self-centered and base, if you will. And so again, the thought was planted, and the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat the fruit of the tree of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die." And so she's beginning a reasoning back and forth here. So the thought is there, but she comes back with this response and says that God has stated that if you eat of this, you're going to die. Now, don't know what was in her mind, whether she thought maybe it was instantaneous or whatever, but the penalty of sin is death. That's the point. It's eternal death. It doesn't mean it's something that happens to you right away. A lot of times with sin, people aren't punished immediately, at least as far as something that's to do with God's law. It's something that does happen in the mind immediately, and man can't recognize that as a whole, what happens to the spirit. But as far as sometimes the penalty that's paid in life, sometimes that may be a little later. So a person may think they're getting by with certain things, like we talked about last Sabbath, smoking. You know, people that smoked large quantities in their life and never bothered them in their health, lived up to be 100 years old. Gave that example last Sabbath. And they don't think about it being bad or unhealthy because it didn't bother them. And others see that example or they want to use that example, and they don't talk about the ones that have had, like I mentioned last Sabbath, have had, you know, their throat taken out or lungs taken out and various things that take place in life and the hideous death that sometimes is associated with those things because it isn't healthy, it isn't good. Then the serpent said to the woman, "You shall not surely die." So again, this thinking is going on. I'm not free to take of everything. I'm not going to die. And beginning to look at God in a different way. Different ideas that begin to flood into the mind. A beginning a process of thinking for a human being. But summed up in a very quick way here. Verse 5 goes on to say, "For God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be open and you shall be like God, knowing good and evil." You know, earlier on, we read the example where God said that they were taken away from the Garden of Eden because they had made themselves as God in the sense of knowing good and evil, in the sense of knowing what that word means, knowing, to determine for themselves, judging for themselves, deciding for themselves right and wrong. In other words, God's word was no longer the standard. God wasn't the authority on it anymore. They began making themselves the authority, or began looking to their own reasoning and justifications of why they could do the things that they chose to do. And something unique began to happen in the mind. It began to be distorted. They couldn't think properly. From that moment on, the mind of Eve needed to be healed. From the very moment she started to sin, healing needed to take place because she hurt her mind, just as God said about Satan. And so he said, "Your eyes will be opened." Your eyes, what we talked about earlier, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, it goes into the mind, your thinking, it will be opened up to different ideas and different thoughts of things that God has told you should not have. You can make yourself as God to determine these things, just like God does. So when the woman saw, again, lust of the eyes, it entered into her mind. She began to contemplate and think about these things and to realize she wasn't free with Satan's definition to have every tree of the garden. And the woman saw, this is what entered in her mind, that the tree was good for food. For whatever goes on sometimes in people's minds, whatever we go through sometimes to justify or to, like it is walking through the trees and thinking that God doesn't see you or somehow blocking out God and whatever we do in the mind to justify something that we do as human beings, this is a part of a process spiritually that was going on with her in her mind. And so she began to think upon these things and dwell upon them. You know, dwelling upon wrong ideas and wrong thoughts and contemplating things that are different from what God says is the very thing that finally leads to the actual doing of it. The sin, the lust of the flesh, to gratify what we're thinking about, what we think is going to bring gratification. And it does to carnal, selfish human nature, because the nature is one of get. And so when they get, it's not satisfied, it wants more. It wants more and more and more, you know, whatever, of life. Because it's really never fully satisfied, because it isn't God's way. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, you know, we talked about the Christmas tree, it's not ugly. You know, to a child, what a hideous thing. The children at a very young age, this is planted in the mind. And it's more than a human being can deal with. If that's what you grow up with, that's what you begin to think. And it's a part of you after a while. And then Satan has messed up the mind and put wrong ideas of whatever into it. Christianity, supposed traditional Christianity, and, you know, the babe in a manger and all the little things that go along with some of the deceptions that take place from that point on about Christmas and even the time of year that people swallow hook, line, and sinker and then later on even know that it's not fully true. But it's okay because it honors God, doesn't it? It honors Jesus Christ. It looks to Jesus Christ as giving Him an honor and celebrating His birthday. And we're thankful of that. So God wouldn't be upset about that, would He? You know, God wouldn't see that as being wrong, would He? It'd be something surely that's pleasing in God's sight. And giving gifts to children, isn't that a nice thing to do for your children? And so all these deceptions, and so people are imprisoned to it until God finally starts to call us out. And how many people I've known through time that have come into God's church who've had difficulties addressing the subject of Christmas with family? Because you have to make a stand. You have to stand up and say, we're not going to participate in the gift thing anymore. We're not going to keep Christmas in our home. Because sooner or later, they're going to find out. And sooner or later, the way traditions are as a whole society, you have to tell them. And I've known of people who have had battles with some of those things in a big way. Struggles. Because it's so hard because you're talking about family and making a stand for something that you don't want to look weird or different. But the truth makes you look a little weird and different, doesn't it? Because nobody does it. Because it's not of the world. And so you have to take a stand. begin learning. Incredible how God molds and fashions us. And so it's pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, to decide for yourself. Pride was beginning to take root here. She took of its fruit and ate. It happened. Pride was there, lust of the eyes, and now lust of the flesh. She took it, says, and ate it. She also gave to her husband with her, and he ate. And then he blamed the woman. Didn't accept personal responsibility. You know, he was guilty. He was guilty of his own sin and didn't want to accept the personal responsibility for what he'd done. Then the eyes of both of them were opened. Their minds started thinking differently, started dealing with things differently. Right then and there, they corrupted their thinking process that God had given to them that was, to that point, perfect and clean and clear. But they corrupted their very spirit, that very portion of the mind that is so precious, that now and for all, it takes time then, through a process of healing, to have that process begin to be taken away until we finally become a part of God family, and it's fully gone then. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. Isn't that amazing? Now, God showed later on he was going to give them skin and so forth, things to clothe with as populations and things began to develop and grow on the earth. But here at the very beginning, they decided for themselves, whatever, we don't know. God hasn't shown it all. But from the very beginning, because of Satan, perhaps thinking about God and whatever, and they begin to think, for whatever reason, I'm naked. I need to be clothed. And so they sewed, it says, fig leaves together and made themselves coverings because they had a shame in something that they shouldn't have shame in. And so mankind, the mind of mankind from that time forward has been perverted when it comes to a right use of understanding something that God gave between a man and a woman in marriage. And to know of a surety that God sees everything. We're all naked before God. In more ways than one, aren't we? You know, literally, he sees, he knows us, he made us, he created us. And what a foolish thing for a human being to begin thinking in those terms, in that fashion. But something happened that perverted the mind. Now, this is an amazing thing to me because the very things we've talked about already here, they summarize everything that have been the heart and core of man's biggest problems in human life. They truly do. The misuse of things, the very things that are stated here, the very things about how we're not able to see ourselves properly, the false shame that should not be there but is, it's in the human mind. I would say that every one of you has some kind of shame in your mind because of your past, because of your thinking, because of various kinds of relationships. I know that men do. Okay? Absolutely, without question, at a very young age. It happens. And because the mind does think wrong, because that's the way society is. Women, I don't know about. I haven't lived that life. Yeah. But I know the mind is different there. But how much, I don't know fully. I just know there are differences. We know some of the differences, obviously. You have to judge those things amongst yourselves about to what degree, but they happen to both. The distortion, the perversion of the mind and how we think. And so, again, this is not a small thing. This is an incredible thing to grasp and comprehend, what we do to our mind. And if we can take that a step further, that's hurt human relationships. We are talking about the very thing that has hurt, the basis of hurting all human relationships has started here. And it's carried through time and society. And the more man has misused, misapplied, it isn't even a matter of applying what is true from God because man is so far away from that. And even in the Protestant world, I think of Victorian times and those who consider themselves to be religious, but how perverted they were concerning the subject of husband and wife, man and woman, sexual relationships. The mind has been perverted, distorted, and people don't grasp then how that is the heart and core of right thinking towards one another, men toward women, women toward men, women toward women, men toward men, and how people think and what they think they're free to discuss and what they're not free to discuss. and to think. And we live in a sick, putrid society today because of how people are so far away from the trunk of the tree, from what God has given. When the mind can be healed, then the right things can begin to come from that. Right relationships, better relationships. I so look forward to the millennial period when people are going to be educated in right ways, when they're going to have stronger guidelines in the sense of authority and power, because there's only going to be one source teaching it all, coming from God through Jesus Christ to the 144,000 out to the rest of the world. That's powerful. Just a one way of life, and people to be in harmony about that. And I think of some of the horrible perversions to the point where you think about relationships and how hard it's going to be for some to come out of some of the background they're in when they think that all they can see through is something as a piece of cloth through the eyes. And you can't even show too much of that. Sometimes that's even shaded with other cloth to where you can't even see out of that. And you think, don't you realize that that is the very thing that shows something in a very strong way of the mind, of the perversion that's there? Not only is it something physical, but it's spiritual. To know that your mind is so distorted you can't think right toward other women or toward other men, when you think that's a standard of life that God would be pleased with, that's just perverted. It's sick, as everything is in the world. And if we can begin to grasp some of this, of what we're talking about in Genesis, I hope that young men, all men, but especially young men, people that God, whom God is calling, people are going to live into the millennium and be the building blocks, if you will, in the millennium, can begin to grasp and understand some of these things. That the very things that are a part of our society today are the very things that hurt true fellowship. The kind of fellowship, the kind of community, the kind of families, the kind of way we interact that become cleaner and purer as time goes on. Because the reality is, our minds have been polluted from the very beginning of time, truly. And that's why that great church, great in the earth, as far as numbers is concerned, that calls itself a Christianity, has so perverted this subject even. Perverted it. Perverted it in its ministry. In those who supposedly can't have any kind of relationships in life, that the height of being religious before God is to never marry, you marry Christ. What a perversion of what it's saying there. That's not what it talks about when it talks about marriage to God and in a relationship there that we have toward God and Christ. But to go through something that so twists and so distorts, and that yet we find out through history and through time, that didn't work too well. It didn't work too well with all the tombs of little babies they've found and all the places where some of the sickness of past history around that very area and that very vicinity and things that have been uncovered and found out that have been hushed. And you think, what a sick, sick, sick perversion. Anyway, but if we can begin to grasp mind and how people have felt ashamed of things that God said you should never feel ashamed about. But the problem is it's not used in the right way, so people do feel shame. And sometimes, and I'm talking about primarily when you come into God's church, because in the world, people don't even grasp that. And too many don't have any shame whatsoever because they don't feel like they're doing anything wrong. That's why they're free to do all the things they do and justify what they do that's distorted and perverted. So the eyes of both of them were open and they knew. So what happened to the mind? That they were naked. Incredible. Perversion and distortion of something here that shouldn't have happened. But it's happened from the very beginning. Right here in Genesis, just these few verses show the heart and core, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life, and then the fruit of it. Perversion, distortion, lack of soundness of mind. So again, sin distorts sound thinking. As sin causes a further separation, or if you will, farther from God, soundness of mind, and which is the only way we have ability to grow in soundness of mind. It has to come from God to grasp even what true freedom is in these things. And so again, that's why I'm going to mention it again. You don't need to turn there, but Ezekiel 28, verse 17. To understand what happens, we need to understand what happens. When God said to Satan, your heart was lifted up because of your beauty, the way you saw things, the way you saw yourself, because of that inward spirit and attitude and mind, and turning away from God's way. and turning to his own ideas and what he thought was better than God's, his own beauty. He says, your wisdom, you have corrupted your wisdom. It means to destroy or to mar, to ruin. So his mind from that point forward was ruined. It was marred. It was unsound. It could never be sound again. He destroyed something beautiful that God had given to him. Thankfully, for human beings, we can change. God has given them the ability to repent and change and for the mind to be healed. That's why I love the scriptures that talk about healing. They're awesome. They're beautiful in what they have to say. That's why God mentions it so often. If I can find it quickly here, just a moment. That was an understatement. Or overstated. Just read it quickly here. Isaiah 57. Ah, we can turn there. Isaiah 57. Because basically this is what God is even addressing here in Isaiah 57, toward Israel, toward mankind. In verse 10 it says, you are wearied in the greatness of your way. You know, your beauty, your thinking, your way, as opposed to God's way. Yet you have not said there is no hope. In that way, mankind, look at here they talk about the possible fiscal cliff. What a joke. And then the stocks go down 1%. Woo-wee. You know, they should have gone down 10%. You know, because it's so close to a crash. But that's not the way man is, because man is not worried in his own ways and the false hope that he puts up there and the things he lives by. And I read some stuff today about what the government's been doing about pumping up various areas of things on the sly and on the side. You think, it's such a sickness, and the world has been mesmerized by it. The media has made us numb by all these things, and people are fully asleep. You've not said there is no hope. In other words, you wouldn't come to a point where you would actually look to God and repent, because there is no hope in what you're doing. Instead, you just continue to live on that and feed yourself with false hope. You have found the life of your hand. You know, what you're able to do, what you're able to accomplish, what you're able to build. You know, destroy it. Or we're going to build it up greater. It's going to be greater than it was before. We're going to be mightier than what we were before. Oh, amazing. The haughtiness of mankind. Therefore, you are not grieved. The kind of grief, the kind of sorrow, the kind of things that can lead to repentance and change, because people see the way they're going. And so God says, you haven't been wearied in your way, in your greatness, in your mind, in your attitude. And of whom have you been afraid or feared? And you have lied and have not remembered me, nor laid it to heart. Haven't I held my peace even of old, and you do not fear me? And don't you grasp the mercy, the grace, and of what I've given to you, and you still won't turn from your ways? I will declare your righteousness and your works. That's what God says. And that's basically where we are in time, to show mankind at the end of 6,000 years what our righteousness is like. It's not a pretty thing. It's ugly. It's selfish. It's sick. It's inward. And your works, for they'll not profit you. When you cry, let your companies deliver you. You know, let your countries, let your government, let your military, let your economy, let it all deliver you. It's not going to deliver you, God says. But the wind shall carry them all away. Vanity shall take them. But he that puts his trust in me shall possess the land and shall inherit my holy mountain. And shall say, cast up, cast up. Love this verse here, because we talked about that some time back, where we talked about it's like building a road. And just like as you would build a road, you have to make it higher, and so the water comes off of it and runs into ditches. And this is what it's talking about, casting up, building it higher, so people can travel on it. And just like building a highway, building a road. And you build it up, you build a foundation for it, and you keep adding to it till a point where you can continue to go on it, even though it might be bad around you. That's what this is talking about, because it's talking about traveling like a highway or a way that is made. Cast up, prepare the way. Take up the stumbling block out of the way of my people. So God uses that just as an example here of something of how we're to live our lives and take away the stumbling block and the thing that causes people to trip and fall down. For thus says the high and the lofty one who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place with him also that's of a contrite and humble spirit. Beautiful verse here, because it has to do with how God can begin to have a relationship with mankind. He has to bring us into a point where he humbles us, brings us into this kind of a spirit and attitude so he can work with us, because before that he can't work with us. If there's pride, you know, pride is what keeps us from being able to receive what God is telling us, because we believe there's a different way, or we don't fully agree with what God's saying to us and telling us. As an example, through what I'm saying in sermons, we don't agree with everything that God gives to us. We pick and choose and decide what we want to agree with and what we think is wrong. And I've already had feedback about some of the different things out here and about some of the things that have been said in some of the sermon series. And you know, sometimes we have different ideas. Well, shame on you. God is communicating to all of us and trying to show us how to have sound minds, how to have better lives, and how to change and how to grow. And it takes a humble spirit to be able to do that, to revive the spirit of the humble, to make alive, to revive. That's what it's saying here, the spirit of the humble, because God can't revive the proud because they already know what's right. They don't need God. They don't need God to show them, to teach them, to show them what's right or wrong. And to revive the heart of the contrite ones. God will do that. God can do that. But it takes that. That's what it takes. For I will not contend forever, neither will I always be filled with I hate this word here because it's about anger or wrath. That's how it's translated here. But it has to do with judgment. And it has to do with what has to come on mankind. For the spirit should fail me and the souls which I have made. So God has that great mercy indeed. For the iniquity of his covetousness was I angry and smote him. In other words, there was a time for judgment. It's not the kind of anger we associate with the kind of selfish, unrighteous anger that we have as human beings. And he talked about how man just went on forwardly in his own heart and his own way. I have seen his ways and will heal him. Because amidst of it all, God has a plan to heal the mind. That's what it's about. Not about physical healing, it's about the mind, it's about the spirit, it's about a transformation of how we think of what God's going to take on into his family. I have seen his ways and will heal him. God knows he made us. He made us that we be selfish. He made us to have that kind of life, to live selfish human lives. He purposely made us this way, knowing we would be selfish, because we have to live this first. In order to learn, in order to loathe what it does. And we can't really begin to do that until God begins to reveal to us his way. And that's what happens to us in the church. That's why we hate this world right now. I have never seen a time in God's church where I can say that and a lot of it has to do with where we are on time, but a lot of it has to do with technology and what we see in the world today. I have never seen a time where God's people have had their full of this world. I mean, just burdened down with how sick and how perverted and how evil the world is. I have never known a time, and that's a good thing that God has brought us to this time, to have such a desire for his kingdom, to have such a desire to come through this, to get through this, to get away from all the filthiness that's out there. I have seen his ways and will heal him. I will lead him also and restore comforts unto him and to his mourners. I create the fruit of the lips. Peace. To him that is afar off and to him that is near. And this is what God begins to give to us once we begin to be drawn. He begins to show us the way of peace. He begins to lead us out of Egypt, but we're not out until we're out, until we're in the God family. We're not fully out of it. But he starts a process that starts to take us out of sin, out of Egypt, out of bondage. Peace, peace to him that is afar off and to him that's near, says the Lord, and I will heal him. It's what God offers. So anyway, incredible. And that's what we're talking about here, the way of peace, the way of a sound mind. We have to go through a healing process. And so just as Satan distorted his mind, hurt his mind, that's what we do every time we sin. We hurt the mind. We hurt the potential for what God says can be molded and fashioned and created in us. And that's why we read Jeremiah 17:9. Just a reminder, you don't need to turn there. We read where the human heart is deceitful, and I don't like the term desperately wicked, because even though it is wicked and works toward that, it's simply a word in the Hebrew that means weak, sickly, as it were, incurable. And the mind of man is incurable. The only way it can be is by God's healing, by what he does through his calling. And so that's just the way we are because of sin. We're not able to see right, think right, be right in the spirit, in the mind, save that we receive that which comes from God. It isn't in us. Anyway, last Sabbath we left off from discussing many things that need to be addressed as soon as the millennium is established, things that we need to begin to address in our lives now with, again, a greater fervency of spirit. God's blessing us with a focus on those things, and to the degree we look at them and seek to change in our life is to the degree we're going to grasp and comprehend what He's offering us. So there are a lot of things that, again, that have to be changed. We've talked about some of them. So much that has to do with technology and the misuse of technology and things that have to be done right, taught right, and taught right concerning its use early on, from the very beginning, from the get-go. Some have misunderstood, I think, some of the things I've said concerning the Internet. Just to make this clear, there will be an Internet. There will not be the misuse of it, the perversion of it. There will be things that will never be allowed on it. Okay. It is a powerful tool of communication in a world of technology, and but it has to be learned. We have to learn to use it right. Some have talked about how they've holding back from texting, and I hope you mean when you're driving down the road. But texting is fine. But again, there's a use of it that can hurt, and a misuse of it that can hurt. And so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about how to learn to judge things and to use things properly, because man has never had a time where we've had the ability to use things with such power. If we can understand the power of things like a nuclear weapon and everything else we have has great power in technology. Not just powers of destruction that we see something blown up, but there are powers to destroy, that destroy the mind, that destroy human life, because of misuse of things that are out here. So again, there are things that have to be, that will be there, but they need some types of programs, some types of things will be totally gone or done away with. Some will be able to be allowed, but it's the use of them that will make changes, with regulations and restraint that will be taught. Last week I mentioned some things about Facebook, because this is an easy one. But we don't realize sometimes how things and technology, when it's not used right, can so hurt the human mind and relationships. And that's what it's all about. God's a family, and He wants us to live by laws that regulate right relationships. And there are things that just hurt those relationships. But anyway, and the point, I'm going to read some of these things that I said I wasn't going to last week, but there's some other articles about some of the use of Facebook that I think need to be brought out, just so we can realize there are things that draw people to them and in a wrong way, that's not healthy, that's not good. And as an example here, here's an article. It says, "Is social media the new face of divorce?" This is from a report in a CBS in New York station up there. It says, "As millions of people get involved with social media, there are some new issues coming to light. The sites include Facebook, Twitter, I'm not sure if this Tumblr, I've never heard of that, and more, and the social media world continues to grow. However, with every new user comes the opportunity for an alternative life. One that isn't really theirs. Which can include secrets that may break up relationships. If you're like most people, you probably checked out You probably checked out one of your former flames online. You think, to say something like that, to think that's a proclivity of people in the world, you think, well, how sick that people would engage in such things. But even the way that's written, it sounds like that's just kind of expected. I hope nobody in God's church does that kind of stupidity. This seemingly harmless behavior is going a lot further and is leading to the end of more and more marriages. One woman who wanted to remain anonymous was shocked to find out her husband had a whole other life with a handful of other women online. I was shocked because I thought everything was great, the woman said. A divorce attorney quoted in the article said that people are getting into treacherous terrain on Facebook, rekindling memories and relationships, explained how that they have countless clients whose marriages have been ruined by social media. In other words, it's just enabled a faster deterioration of a right relationship that should be there, but it's helped to destroy it faster than the normal more powerful ways. It goes on to say this kind of behavior is so common, there's even a website called facebookcheating.com. Anyway, Another one, this is, does Facebook wreck marriages? This is from the UK. It says, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, changed his status to married Saturday. This goes back a ways. And received over 1 million likes from his followers. Amazing. But this, and who do you think those were from? Well, in this world, it could have been from anyone. But the site he founded isn't always so marriage-friendly. In fact, lawyers say the social network contributes to an increasing number of marriage breakups. More than a third of divorce filings last year contain the word Facebook, according to a UK survey by a legal services firm. It affirms affairs, it says, happen with a lightning speed on Facebook, says the author of Facebook and Your Marriage. In the real world, he says, office romances and out-of-town trysts can take months or even years to develop. On Facebook, he says, they happen in just a few clicks. See, power. Something that under normal conditions and situations in an office environment, a business environment, might take months or years to still shows that things happen like that, and they happen obviously way, way too much. But now it's made so much easier. There's so much power to happen quickly, and that's what it's showing here. Because people tend to let down barriers, think things are done in secret more, and are willing to do more. These are the kinds of pulls that people in God's church have in different areas of life because of human nature. These are the kinds of things that you have to fight against. Say, does that happen? Absolutely it happens. People being called out of that kind of a world? Yeah, it's already out there. Whatever you're called out of is the very thing you have to work to change. Anyway, it goes on to say, the social network is different from most social networks or dating sites in that it both reconnects old flames and allows people to friend someone they may only meet once in passing. It puts temptation, entice. It puts temptation in the path of people who would never in a million years risk having an affair. Isn't that sick? Just a misuse of something that's supposedly in secret, that human beings are drawn to do. That's why these things are so bad, so wrong. There are some things that can't be allowed, period. But again, you can't control human behavior, but with right teaching, with right education of use of things, people are going to come to understand what they must fight. And what, that's why Mr. Armstrong said it's going to take three or four generations to get out of the cesspool and to have clearer minds and clearer lives and more the kind of family that God intends for mankind to have in the best of conditions in this world. Because the reality is we still have human nature, but it's going to take that long to get a lot of things cleaned up because candidly, things are just passed down. Habits, things that people have in their life, parents, the way children are reared, and then it can get better and better through time. And that's a beautiful thing when we see that happening. And that's what parents who truly love God's way of life love to see. To see their children doing better, growing and maturing and having a closer relationship with God and conquering and overcoming many of these difficult tasks, difficult things of life, of human life, because these are big things. In a time of technology, the world has never known to this degree. Another article here, social networking, a big contributor to divorce. It says some data started coming out in 2009 and 2010 that said one in five divorce petitions in the United States literally named Facebook as one of the reasons to the downfall of the marriage. According to the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, over 80% of divorce attorneys said that they have seen an increase in the number of divorce cases involving social networking. Lindstrom said Facebook and other social media sites puts temptations right at your fingertips because it's very easy to reconnect with, suppose, you know, past loves or flings. It's a way to relive good times, supposedly. You know, people have this distortion of what was a better time, and you find out when they were in it was just as bad as what they have now. But anyway. But the human mind tends to deceive itself. It's a way to relive good times in your past, and if your current relationship or when your current relationship is on shaky ground, that it could be a very dangerous situation. Another one here, it says Facebook named a third of all divorce filings in 2000. So before it was one in five, and now this is now 2011, because they talked about, 2009 and 2010, it was one in five. Now it says here, 2011, the social network shows how quickly it's growing, how fast it's mushrooming. The Social Network was implicated in a third of all divorce filings last year. Before it was 1 in 5. Now it's in a third. According to a survey by the same British Legal Service, now an affair is just a click away, and the consequences, what happens online, cannot be erased from online, can be permanent and devastating. People feel bolder behind a screen than in person. People type and press send faster than common sense can kick in. Reminds me of that proverb we read, to stop and think. Today, people don't stop and think. You know, they just do, and do it more quickly. Before common sense can kick in, and people feed off the rush. Human nature, easy to be, you know, a rush that sometimes people get, a rush in sin, a rush to defy God, a rush to do something that's not right, a distorted rush. Isn't that sick? It's like a drug. That they're feeling, rather than rationally thinking about what they're doing. Still, just because Facebook is named in divorce doesn't mean it's caused the marriage to fall apart. That's obvious. But it just shows a tool to enable things to happen quicker and more often in society than what it was before. That's the kind of world we live in. It's because everything is so misused, things are happening quicker, and what's happening in the mind, and man not able to use it because there's no guidance and direction and teaching out here. And as a matter of fact, some of it's just absolutely the opposite of what it should be. Another one here. I thought this was interesting. We were talking last Sabbath after services, and this one article I did find, because I'd read some of them before, but it talks about managers and people who are hiring. It says, hiring managers admit to surfing job seekers' social media profiles. This article says, sure, this may sound pretty obvious, but in a recent survey, hiring managers admitted to browsing job seekers' social media profiles. According to a new survey conducted by CareerBuilder, approximately 37% of all companies surveyed said they researched job candidates on various social networking sites. Although 11% indicated they don't currently check out online identities, they're going to start. What exactly are they looking to find? They want to evaluate a job seeker's character and personality outside the interview room. In other words, they want to figure out what you're really like. They're relying on Facebook and, what's this, LinkedIn. A small percentage relies on Twitter. People are stupid. People are just plain stupid on some of these. And what they do and how they use it. It's because their mind isn't right and they don't think right. And you think, what is it you're trying to portray? You know, that someone can, you're seeking a job and they can go on your site and say, man, you're sick. You know, I don't want you in this company. An individual was telling me that there was a very well-known professional that someone was going to hire recently, and they went on their site, and because of that, they weren't going to hire them because they saw what they were like on Facebook. Isn't it amazing? Anyway, results of the survey showed that 65% of the hiring managers wanted to see if the candidate presented himself professionally. That's asking a lot nowadays. More than half wanted to find out if the job seeker is culturally a fit, and approximately 35% wanted to find out if the candidate is well-rounded. One third of the hiring managers ended up finding information that was less than flattering and resulted in not moving forward with the candidate. Well, people do the dumbest things that hurt potential in life, in the job market, in the world. Don't even know how to present themselves sometimes in some of these cases. And that's another story that we're going to get into later here, how the technology has hurt society and young people and people going into a workforce. It has had a devastating effect on the human mind and how people think about themselves, how they think about jobs and work and so forth. And those things need to be addressed, because in the last 2 months I have heard so many stories of things that need to be changed in the environment of God's church. And it has to be addressed. So whether we get to some of that today or next Sabbath, it's coming. Because this is a direct spinoff of the technology we have today that has hurt the minds of people and how certain things are seen and understood in life, and what life is supposed to be like from God's vantage point, what He tells us how to live, and what we have slumbered into that is not healthy. These things are going to change in the millennium in a very powerful way. Going on, this article says, examples include posting inappropriate photos, information about a candidate drinking and using drugs. You know, how dumb can you be? But people are dumb. Not a lot of smarts in using some of the things out here. That's why I really shouldn't have ever had to even say, don't use Facebook for the sake of protection of people in the church because of what it does. That's simple in itself, let alone all the other garbage out here, the things that can be misused and so forth. We should have been able to see those things. But that depends on your mind and where you are and how you're thinking about the use of things in society. But that's how we learn. We have to be shown because we get caught up in it. We become prisoner to it, in bondage to it, and we don't even know what happened until after we've gone through it. And then we're able to look back and say, yeah, man, that was really dumb. And I murmured about it. You remember the Israelites murmuring? We're like that. Who does he think he is telling us to get off Facebook? Oh, I don't agree with that. I just don't think that's right. I don't think it's harmful. I don't think it hurts. I'm not misusing it. No. Anyway, you just don't know it, do you? You don't realize what it does to your mind. You can't see what you can't see until your mind is healed, until you start practicing the right things, and that's the point of the sermon series in a large part. Until we start practicing more of the right things and fighting against the battles that are there, you're not going to be able to see what God wants you to see. You're not going to be able to grasp in a more profound way the things that must be changed and why, to understand the spirit of it. Though it has a strong hold on you in life, there are battles you have to fight. There are battles you have to choose to fight. Other major no-nos, it goes on to say, for social media profiles include bad-mouthing former employers. That's going to make you want to hire somebody, isn't it? Oh, look at this trend here, blah, 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 you know. It's like people who have been divorced 5 or 6 times and they've cheated each time to go with somebody else, and then how the 6th one could think, they'll never cheat on me. They'll never cheat. How dumb can we be as human beings? And then it happens, they cheat. Oh, they're devastated. Thank you. Write it on the wall. A big hand. So again, other major no-nos for social media profiles include bad-mouthing former employers, making discriminatory comments, and lying about his or her qualifications. On the other side of the coin, almost one-third of hiring managers indicated they find something online that was ultimately positive and pushed them to extending the job offer. It's like how you might present yourself when you go to an employer, you know. You don't go with freaked-out hair and a T-shirt when you're going to apply for a job in a nice place, you know, and go to a manager and talk to him, and you come in kind of smelly and unclean. You know, it's just that stupid to misuse social media like this. That's how stupid it is. And people don't seem to understand that how you present yourself has some meaning to people in the world because, anyway, there's some job ethic and job sense there, and there are certain things you will go the extra mile to do in order to do it. Anyway, goes on to say some receive good sense from the candidate's personality and also mention a professional image was also a reason to hire. So again, so some people haven't been as stupid, basically is what they're saying. Still a bad media to use. So again, that's just one example of something we've seen in this time, but there are so many more of things that are just misused. Things that young people have to be taught about what you put out there and the stupidity sometimes. People, you know, the pull of human life, say starting in teenagers, when a change begins to take place in your life, and the attraction between two people begins to be drawn there, and sometimes the temptation by things that are said because people are alone, and they're willing to say something in a freer way on the telephone than they would face to face, and then if you add to that, what are some of these, Skype, where you can actually see a picture, things that people are tempted to do, and do engage in that are so stupid and foolish and can hurt themselves for life. It's so, so bad. And so there's a need for so much education to take place in a right way and to show people the results and to teach the results, the end result of doing those things. And I'm thankful those things are coming because the reality is we're going to have technology there that we're not going to do away with. You know, the ability to have things like that is a very beautiful and powerful tool when used properly. But to be able to have access as a young person, totally at your own, 24 hours a day, you know what? It's kind of like what God gave a responsibility to parents in the first place. The reason that basically a parent has responsibility over a person until around the age of 18, come or go, they're just a little bit, you know, a little bit on either side, but basically around that area of, is because the reality is they need to be told no many times in their life. Because you know what? They're not ready. They can't handle everything yet. And just like us not being able to, mankind not being able to fully handle technology, and the reality is that young people can't, it's like the saying, well, we've had different things about Sabbath services and whether a child, and I don't want to get into all this sometimes because sometimes through counsel it is good to be able to tell someone no because of that kind of conduct and whatever, that you shouldn't bring them to services. But as a whole, you know, giving young people an opportunity at 12, 13, 14, 15 to decide whether or not they're going to play games on Friday night or play something on the Sabbath, that's why they need a parent, you know, because you can tell them as a parent, I'm making the decision for you because I know the decision you're going to make. You're going to make the wrong one. You know, if you're pulled in that direction, that's the decision you're going to make. That's why a parent is there. And so it is with various gadgets and things that people have, and the reality is, there needs to be more restraint. There needs to be a greater control. How to do all that? I don't have all the answers because there's so much stuff out there. Thankfully, there's going to be 144,000 who have far sharper minds and are going to know exactly what needs to be done and be able to educate and teach people how to do it, who will go out and teach others how to do it in a right way, in a better way. And then families are going to learn how to properly do things. And then children are going to learn, well, they're doing what they're being shown, and that's better for me. That's healthier for me. And there's a respect there and a communication that, as a whole, we don't have in the world. Anyway. So again, there's so many things that we can address, but that's just one of many. Some things have to be totally done away with, totally revamped, totally reworked. Other things are going to continue on. It's just the use of them that has to be taught. There has to be so much more education. It's just not available in the world today at all. There's one example that I want to mention here that helps in learning how to judge things. And it concerns a particular subject here that I think can put some people to test, because I think even within the church, because although I've mentioned it at the ministry, I haven't mentioned it in the church, whereas I probably should have at some point, or at least put something on the FAQ, but I didn't. But it's on the subject of, under the classification of gambling. We have some people in God's church who have problems with that. And you talk about hurting your finances, the things that are done there when those things happen. It's horrible. It's like alcoholism. It's like taking of drugs or whatever. There are some things that happen. It's like sex addictions and so forth. It's all a matter of enticement and being drawn to it. And everybody has different things that work in their minds and in their lives to where things can be done improperly in a wrong way. And I think this one here is good because it causes you to, or it can, stir you by thinking it through. What does God say? What does God say? Because, see, we've had this careening from ditch to ditch in different subjects in times past because it's a matter of maturing process. We've had it with makeup. We've had it with the subject of makeup throughout the years. Makeup got changed back and forth several times. On, off. Wax on, wax off. Anyway. And there were battles because of that, because it tests the attitude and spirit of people. And that was revealing in itself. It reveals things about our nature and whether we're at one with the government of God, because things administratively do and can change. And some try and test us. But there were some things that went along with that we just weren't there yet. We didn't grasp and understand. So there were some things, there were scriptures that were used to support, to back up when we shouldn't have it, when it shouldn't be used. One example was Jezebel. She wore bright, you know, makeup and different things. And so makeup's bad. It wasn't that Jezebel was bad. It was about makeup and the use of it. It's just bad and wrong. Because if a pagan does something, then it's wrong. You know, we've gone through some of those in times past. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Some of you are older in the church, you know what I'm talking about. Some of you are younger, don't. But there used to be some things that would come across almost like, well, if the pagans used to do it, then we shouldn't. Did they go to the bathroom? Don't do it. No, anyway. That's about how bad it was. It's like certain styles, or I think of the paisley tie. I heard, and what was the shoe? The shoe that has the holes, what is that design? Wingtip. Even a wingtip shoes, the pagans use as designs. Oh, so we shouldn't use them in the church. You're like, give me a break. You know, just because they lit a fire to cook their food. Anyway. So there was balance. We didn't always, that's how you learn balance. You learn balance by going back and forth in some things sometimes in life. And the best we have is when we're in the center of the road. And then we're creating over the other side from the far right to the far left. Don't wear it, wear it. Don't wear it, wear it. Anyway, and the answer was in the middle. Moderation. That's what the real answer was. Because there is no scripture that you can look to that condemns the use of it. It is the use of it. Like with everything, it's like alcohol. There are religious organizations that believe that alcohol is wrong. You shouldn't have it. There are those of Islam who believe it's just wrong to have. It's because they don't have alcoholism in their society. They don't have drunk drivers in their society. Anyway. So there are things that are just misused. Man tends to misuse things. And as it is with alcohol, God shows that alcohol is... There are groups that will quote you scriptures and tell you why it's wrong to have, and you quote things about Christ, and they try to say, oh, no, and then the wine you take, that's grape juice, and it's not fermented at all. You know, and all the ramifications that people get into in some of these things. And the reality is, no, alcohol... There are some people who have been a part of God's church who say it's wrong to eat meat because of things they've been taught in the past. No, it's not. God makes it very clear. It's fine to eat meat. But again, something like that should be done in moderation. We've become a very unhealthy society, especially in this part of the Western world, because of an abuse of it or a misuse of it or overeating of certain things. We don't tend to do things in balance. And it's like a farmer. It's just steak and potatoes. That's all I want. Steak, potatoes, and corn. Three meals a day. Well, I'll have eggs in the morning. We'll skip the potatoes in the morning. Anyway, that's not healthy for you. Anyway, moderation, balance. There are things we learn through time. But again, they're saying the subject of gambling. Again, something to ask about. Some people will come out and say, oh, any form of gambling because you use money is just wrong. And I told the ministry, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. You can't find anything like that scripturally. Where can you find it? What is different in that than if a person has something in moderation, as an example, that they spend a certain amount for entertainment? How much does it cost to go to a football game? You have some people with you, you have hot dogs, whatever else that's there, depending on where you get your seats. How much does it cost to go to some kind of a show of some sort? I'm not talking just about a movie theater. Movie theater is now getting more and more. You know, now you can set up higher and you can have them come and serve you a full meal as well, which is fine. If that's what you want to spend, if you have the money for entertainment. But there's a problem there. As with alcohol, there is a basic nature of man that is weak. As with alcohol, and because of the way society is geared, like in bars, like in gatherings, the misuse of it is what is taught by society. The abuse of it is what is taught by society. The overuse of it is what is taught by society, to where people can get into a habit of drinking much because it's just the norm. People get together after work and they have 4, 5, 6, whatever drinks, which is not only expensive, you know, and hurts your finances for your home, but it intoxicates. And then people get in a vehicle and they kill people. Stupid things that human beings do sometimes without thought of responsibility. And so how do we judge matters in life? It's by what is moderate and what isn't moderate. It's by things that either God says as a guideline or a boundary, certain things that should not be allowed at all, certain things that are. It's the use of things. It's like the sexual relationship. God created it to be a beautiful thing between a man and a woman in marriage. Period. That's it. From there on, it's sin. Now, man hasn't done too well with that one, has he? That's the most highly abused one of all, misused one, because there is a powerful pull on the human mind. That's why there is so much ability on the internet, for it to be abused and misused, because everything imaginable is out there. You can be doing a search on the most basic of things sometimes in of life, and all of a sudden garbage pops up. You have to be very careful because there's so much advertising that's done on the systems out there. And for too many, especially too many men, those can be popped onto, and after a while, and then after a little bit longer, and then the repetition of it grows. And I know those are powerful pulls in human life. They are. But as with everything, we must learn to control everything we have. Those are just physical things. How much more technology, and how fast-paced things are, and things you can do in private. That's what we're talking about here, where all the barriers that normally, under normal society, would be barriers or things that people wouldn't broach, as we read in the articles here, that people wouldn't normally do, as it said, in a million years, because of technology, it's broken down those barriers. And so it's easier for people to sin. We must truly learn to use technology and understand the dangers of misusing it. And again, a lot of this is going to be a matter of education. So again here, I want to go back to this matter of, I should have followed through on some of my notes here because I had it all written out about asking it, because again, what we have to ask first of all about certain things, what are the guidelines that God gives in Scripture? What comes from God's judgment? Because the reality is you're not supposed to decide on your own. You're not supposed to judge by what you think is right or wrong. There are people who think that in times past in various religions that any kind of dancing would be wrong. It's not. You know, there are some kinds that's not, that is wrong. Again, it's just the right use of certain things and what is being done by it, what is being shown by it, what is its purpose. Same thing with music, and on it goes. But again, we have to look at each thing and seek to ask, what does God say about it? There are people who, religious groups who have believed, especially going back, coming out of Victorian times, and there are religious groups who have believed that you shouldn't play cards. Shouldn't use dice. And then they'll use scriptures in the Old Testament. And it has nothing to do with some of those things. It's like the makeup thing, because Jezebel wore. Can anybody else think of some other scriptures that were used about some things about makeup?
The Egyptians.
Yeah, the Egyptians. Those shameful Egyptians. Those pagans. Yeah, but that's what was said. The Egyptians did it, and so we're not to look like them. Well, yeah, there were things that were abused and misused. I've even mentioned how that in advertisements there is a look in the eyes and the darkness of certain things that are done to lure. That's what even the look. I don't even know how to describe the look. It's that wanton look. I want you and I know you want me. That's what it's in the eyes. And that can be accentuated. And that's just wrong. So on and on it goes. Clothing. How to dress. Standards of life. Again, so often the term moderation keeps coming back because basically so much is that's how what God teaches. There can be many different styles, as there are in around the world, of things that people can wear that are a matter of something in their national background that are beautiful in their setting, in their life. One thing I hope has changed quick is this thing with ties. It's choking us. But again, moderation. Women have to come to understand love toward men in the right way, not in a distorted way. Why? Why? What is the purpose of wearing something that goes so low and shows so much of the breast? What is the purpose and style of that? Why is it that someone wants to hike their dress up to where if they sit down, they've got to squeeze their legs so close together? Why are those things out there in life? Why do people want to portray such an image? And they don't understand they're just cheapening themselves. They're cheapening themselves. When your mind is clean, when your mind is cleaned up, and you see something like that, you see it for what it is. So you see it for being cheap. They don't have any self-respect like they should have. They don't have an understanding of an image, a right kind of image that they really want to portray. Do you want to portray one that you're easily to be used and misused? That you are, you know, and those things have to be taught at a young age to children as they grow up and things of dress and things of not, you know, it goes back to moderation. But it also has a lot to do with understanding the human mind. And we have to understand where designs of things have come from. And they've come from distorted minds that have a different purpose in life and distortions of what they're teaching. Because it's a matter of teaching oftentimes. And it's amazing to me how human beings don't want to be different. And because there's such a strong desire, we want to be like others. We don't want to be looked down upon. We don't want to be looked up as strange or different, especially in school. That's such a hard thing sometimes for parents. And so, thankfully, we're getting out of this age. So those pressures aren't on people and families and parents anymore, so that we can have things in moderation and teach things in the proper use of them that are good. And so there won't be these strong things that work in young people's minds that they have to be like someone else to be liked, to be loved, to be looked up to be befriended. Is that the right word? Anyway, to have friends. And on it goes. So again, there are a lot of things that God hasn't mapped out at every turn in life where we have volumes and volumes of things written of do's and don'ts. He wants us to learn how to judge. There are principles of life that, especially as our mind is being healed, that we can learn how to judge more perfectly with a clearer mind. So again, I mentioned some of those things, but I think of things that have come up in the past. And those of you who are older in the church, things like birthdays. Here we go again. It's like makeup. The pagans did it. Anyway, what was Job? His family did it, and they were killed by a tornado. Don't do birthdays. I'm making a little fun of some of it because we went to certain scriptures that just didn't prove something was right or wrong. It's the use of something. The way the world does something is not healthy. The way things in the world are celebrated is not healthy. We learn moderation. I think the worst thing, one of the worst things in life, in some respects, in a family, would be to say a mother and a father could not recognize, could not remember, could not speak about their own children's birthday, the one that they gave life to, especially the wife, the mother, you know. To think you couldn't talk to your children about the day their children were born and remember that with great fondness because of what it means that they have life. But it's how far do you go? And that's where moderation comes in again. So again, does it come from our own thinking of like Adam and Eve and all of a sudden, we're naked, you know, because of what comes into your mind and how you think you're supposed to judge things? Or is it because it really comes from what God says and what God teaches, that it agrees with the soundness of mind that comes from God? Because only God can give soundness of mind. And so we have to look to God for help and right judgment of things. And you can't have that kind of a mind or entertain that kind of a mind in certain areas of life until you get rid of or are working at getting rid of some of the distortion and perversion. If you have a problem with smoking, you're never going to grasp and understand some of the things I've said about it until you have fought the fight more and it got to the point where you've conquered it. You just can't live in that, as some seem to think they can do in God's church. That's not going to be around in the future. The misuse of alcohol, as much has been said. But see, those are battles of the human mind sometimes. But you really can't grasp and comprehend fully what's being said, what God is saying, until you start cleaning up your mind and your life in some of those areas, and then you begin to grasp. Just like with smoking, like I mentioned, you can't even, until you're cleaned up, you can't grasp how obnoxious it smells. It's a sick smell. When your lungs and your nasal passages are clean, and they don't have fibers, because of your fibers in your nose and the nostril and everything else, and smoked up like car windows. You go by a car sometime and they don't even clean their cars. It's just a filmy brownish color. I'm sorry. We've got to clean up our lives so we can see what is right before God. It's like a young person being taught to live in cleanliness. You can't appreciate it nor understand it until you do it. You know, if you're car is a rolling garbage can, you're really not going to grasp what it is to take care of things, to what it means to keep things clean and to appreciate cleanliness. You know, God appreciates cleanliness. There are things that God shows us in life that are basic about clean lives. you know. But if we don't grasp that, he wants the mind to be clean. But we have to learn physically what it means to be clean. And he starts showing us by cleanly laws and laws of foods, cleanly laws, and so forth. And so that is a good example to begin to understand something of the spirit of the mind, that you have to clean up the garbage can sometimes or clean out the garbage before you can really begin to see things in a beautiful light, the way God has given it. And that's an awesome thing to understand. It's a part of the healing that can take place in the human mind. So again, let's just be open, you know, blunt about some of this. I think about games like blackjack or poker. What is wrong? The Bible doesn't say much about cards, does it? So to say there are scriptures against it, so what do you look to? Well, you look to God. Things that you can do and things that you shouldn't do. And so I gave the example here. Now, the big problem comes in is because people can't go into something as a matter of entertainment because there's nothing different in entertainment between playing a game like that at a table with other people if the environment is right. But you know what? Today's environment is not right. And it won't be that way in the world tomorrow either. They're not going to be giant casinos like there are today. There aren't going to be, just like I mentioned last Sabbath, there aren't going to be places where you go to bars and have a lot of bars either. There was one time on a harvest run, we were up in one part of the country up in Montana. And the downtown area, about every third building was a bar. The whole downtown. Because everybody went there at night. That was their life. And what were they doing? Anyway, I can tell you right now, they were drinking a lot. Every night, and especially on the weekend. But that's the way the world's become, and people think they have to do that. You go to a restaurant, and a lot of them have separate areas for just bars. Now, there's nothing wrong with that per se, unless if you're not educated properly, that isn't where you just go and spend your whole time there. You don't have to go there to have a drink before you maybe have your meal. There's nothing wrong with that. But discipline, guidelines, boundaries, we have to learn to practice those in our life, and we have to teach them a lot more, obviously. And I, again, looking forward to those changes that have to take place. But there's not going to be any luring to sin like there is today. The reality is, with things like gambling, just to make it blunt, is that people lack control, especially in those areas. It's like a bar area. It can't be there. If that's all that's there, and society believes that by that environment, by young people or whatever it is, going to a certain area, I don't even know where people go today, but I know they do. they did in my day, and I just don't know what's out there fully today, but you know, people go to various kinds of places to meet other people. Of course, they may be doing it less because of the internet today. But to go there in that environment to where over-drinking is encouraged and even drugs is encouraged, obviously those things are going to come to us, even the drug part obviously is going to come to a screeching halt anyway. But it's the environment. The environment of a lot of things has to be changed drastically. And it's not that specific things are individually wrong if there are boundaries. It's... I think of the thing of gambling again because I know that some people in the church have had big battles with some of this through times past and have misused those things profoundly so because there is that enticement to keep putting more money. If you get caught up in some of those things like people do with alcohol, and especially in that environment if they're drinking alcohol, they can be enticed to keep because they want something quick and big. They see someone win big. That's not right. Those kinds of things should never be there. So to have the game, that's one thing. But to do it in the way that man does it today has to be changed. Because the reality is people can't handle it. I've seen it over and over again in people's lives. They get caught up in something and they don't have the control, the power to say no. Because there's an alluring thing, a powerful thing there that pulls at too many people and they can't control themselves then. And then after a while, you know, they're throwing more money into something. They're drinking. What do you think? They come around and give people booze like they do. It's so that you lose control and so you get trapped into something and it becomes a vicious thing for people. So anyway, we have to be careful how we judge things. and to realize that anything that has to do with luring people to sin, luring people to not have control, has to be stopped totally, without exception. So, I'm not sure how Las Vegas can be used. I've had some designs for it. There's some beautiful buildings out there that by the time you go in and take out all those tables and all those slot machines, that they would be great places to have feasts, but I don't know if we can do that. But I can see, you know how we used to have embassy suites? We used embassy suites a lot because you could set up a lot of tables and have people meet out there, and the ability to get along, to converse, and fellowship is what I'm talking about, is so much better when you have areas for that. So who knows? But there's so many things about entertainment that have to be changed from top to bottom. Movie industry, music, sporting events, everything is so messed up today. And some people are going to have withdrawals from that. They really are. Some people are going to have withdrawals from some of those things when God lets you know, no, they're not going to be allowed. No, you can't have it anymore. No, we are changing things. We're not going to have some of the kinds of things in sports that we have today. Some of you are going to have withdrawals. It's not going to be the same. Not going to be these multi-billion dollar owners or multi-million dollar owners or whatever it is, paying out multiple millions of dollars to people just so they can squash someone else and invite 80,000 to their arenas to have a great whatever. Let's go back here to Proverbs chapter 5. So I've thrown some things out there just to get you to thinking, just so we start to think about certain areas. And if you have battles in some of these things, these are the things you've got to fight. Because I know these battles are out there. I've heard too many individuals, too many comments, too many young people have written me, and I'm very thankful. I've been very candid and very open in some cases about battles they're fighting and things that are real out here. And I know if it exists there, I know it exists a lot more of individuals who can't bring themselves to say those things. Trouble with pornography. Okay. Continued trouble with alcohol. Trouble with gambling. On and on it goes. God did not call us out of a world, us being perfect. He called us as being very imperfect, but we're to change and we're to grow and we're to conquer and we're to overcome and we're to fight these battles. And fight them we must. And you just continue to go before God and continue to fight. If you don't fight it, you're not going to conquer it. If you don't keep at fighting it and keep going before God and asking for forgiveness of the sins, nothing will change. You've got to constantly fight until you've conquered it. In some cases, you will never conquer some things in your life. But every time you sin or are drawn back to it, you must fight it again. Whatever your weakness, whatever it is your battle is in life, indeed, you must fight it. That is a process whereby your mind is healed, where God can give you more soundness of mind that comes from Him. It's a beautiful thing. Soundness of mind that comes from God. So again, this principle here in Proverbs chapter 5, we talked about it from the very beginning because it has to do with everything in life. You know, it's like some of the stupidity right now about gun control. You know, that should be a simple one. There's nothing wrong with hunting, having a shotgun, having a rifle to kill if you're hunting and killing deer and you know, using the meat of it and storing it in your freezer and knowing just going out and kill for sport for no purpose at all is stupid. But, you know, for a purpose, for something you can enjoy and the sport as well, you know, sport isn't getting a salt lick for deer and then standing back 50 yards and waiting for them to come. So there are things about sports that are good and things that aren't so good. The point being is that to have an assault rifle, though, to where you can have multiple rounds, how dumb is that? They're trying to outlaw it to where you can't have more than 10 rounds. Who needs 10 rounds of anything? You know, whenever I've been deer hunting, if I don't get the first shot, I might as well just have a gun that has one bullet in it, because if I don't get the first shot, the stupid thing's not, or it's not going to stand there being stupid while stupid me gets another bullet, you know, reloaded in there. You know, now I have done that, where I've gotten a couple that are close together. That was a one-timer in my life. But, you know, there's no need for more. So how hard is it to have a law? Even in today's world, you think, why do you need something that shoots more than two or three shells at one time in anything? What is the purpose of having something that's so powerful? What is good about that? And they debate it back and forth, and they can't come to sound. There's no soundness of mind in something so simple and so basic. Blows my mind. Why is it someone needs to go out there and shoot something that blow up a car? Anyway. My son, attend or pay attention unto my wisdom. We look to God in judgment. We look to God to guide and direct and lead us and help mold and fashion our mind, to help heal our mind, to recognize our boundaries and restrictions and restraints that we need to have as human beings, especially with the powerful use of technology out there today. And bow your ear to my understanding. That means you've got to work, you've got to really focus and concentrate. It's like sometimes, you know, we want to make sure we're hearing what's being said, and we almost lean forward a little bit more. Bow the head, so that you might regard discretion. In other words, in this sense, to fully think things through before acting. Like we talked about earlier, you know, the internet, you push a button, you don't think. You know, people get into habits and they don't think, and they just do it quickly and then get pulled into it where, anyway. So that you might regard discretion and your lips might keep knowledge. Thankfully, we're entering a period of time where it's not going to be lost. I don't know how thankful you are, but to me, that's exhilarating to think about an age where only one thing is taught, where everything is going to be taught in family all the way through, one way. Knowledge is going to be there in front of people, the right knowledge, the truth. For the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb. So it uses something very physical here again to teach about a weakness that we have as human beings, to not yield yourself to things that entice to go beyond boundaries that God gives, because you hurt your mind. You ruin your mind. And then you make the battles worse. You know, when you get to be in bondage to something means you don't have power over it. It has power over you. That's why the internet has power over too many people. TV, it can have power over you if you misuse it. And if you use a lot of electronic things today, it really hurts your mind. It can really hurt you mightily, making you slumber, making you sleep, hurting you deeply in your being. That's what technology can do if you don't use it right. If that's all you have a diet of is technology in your life, you go from one thing to another in technology and know nothing in the world that you have part of in essence, and you kind of go off in hibernation, you so destroy your mind. You hurt your mind. Don't let those things happen to you. Fight against those pulls because they're there. For the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb. These things just lure you in. They want to keep you in bondage. You've got to learn to be in control. And the only way you can is with God's help. It's the only way you can be in control of your life. Now, I was going to go into some other scriptures here, but I'm going to go ahead and mention this. Take the time to do it. Now, the misuse of technology is what I was just talking about here. Allures, entices people to become lazy, unproductive, complacent in mind and spirit, and turning more inward. Not a healthy thing. I think I'll save that for next Sabbath. I was going to go into some scriptures and Proverbs, but let's just wait. So we have to fight on every front because technology can be so abused and so misused and so hurt every facet of society indeed. So again here, I think that pretty much summarizes and settles it all. Look to God for soundness of mind, to be able to judge things His way, the right way, and not from our own ideas of things of our past or things maybe we've even heard in the church in times past, because we're ever growing and we're ever maturing and we need to learn how to judge things rightly by what God says and the guidelines and direction He gives.